Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Our Bodies, Our Stories. Last time, we talked about the history of fetishization, and today we're going to pivot a little bit and talk about barriers to healthcare in the AAPI community. Specifically, we are going to talk about how language barriers affect access to proper resources.
Yeah, so you may remember from one of our previous episodes, Twee, who was one of our guest stars, talking about how she was always on the phone with the insurance representatives as a kid because her parents couldn't relay their questions. This instance is just one example of the effects that language barriers have on proper communication and general understanding of the complicated healthcare system.
Yeah, so let's get into the nitty-gritty and see how far-reaching language barriers really are. When you think about navigating the healthcare system, it's not set up in a very comprehensive way. Ideally, it would be like going to the grocery store. You get what you need and pay for exactly those services. However, throwing in the whole health insurance system makes it so there's really a third party involved in the transaction. So if you can't properly communicate with any of the people involved in seeking care, it begins to cause financial insecurity, decreased efficacy in physical care, while maintaining a spread of misinformation as cultural taboos or myths really tend to go unchecked.
Yeah, and when we zoom in a little closer, simple things that you do at the doctor's office, like explaining your symptoms, are just so much harder when the patient cannot explain what they're feeling because of a language barrier. While some people might think that this can be easily remedied by using an interpreter, this is definitely easier said than done. Firstly, interpreters are really difficult to find. And secondly, they can really change the dynamic between doctor and patient. For example, if a parent is a first-generation immigrant and is using their child as an interpreter, the parent might not feel comfortable telling their kid all of their health problems.
Right. And that's really just one example. There are so many more ways language can prevent a patient from receiving the care they need. And we'll get into some of these other stories later on also. But first, let's look at why this lack of access specifically for the AAPI community exists in the first place.
Yeah, so there is this stereotype that Asians are smart and always go on to become doctors. But this stereotype inadvertently increases the language barrier because people don't really think about Asian Americans as being unable to navigate the healthcare system. So this is kind of similar to the model minority concept that we've talked about before. So this concept kind of illustrates the idea that Asians have successfully fit into the American lifestyle because they supposedly have higher income and education levels than other minorities. So issues with healthcare access and finding translators in the AAPI community go largely unnoticed.
In fact, this stereotype also stems from the misconception that Asian immigrants come to the United States almost exclusively to pursue higher education. And yeah, while this is the case for some immigrants, like my parents, for example, there are also several other reasons large groups of Asian immigrants came to the United States. And interestingly, the first wave of Asian immigrants came to the United States during the gold rush in the 1950s. So a large wave of Chinese immigrants came to escape economic turmoil in China. But then once they came here, they were actually considered to be cheap labor by residents here, and they were recruited to work on the Transcontinental Railroad. And more recently too, a large Cambodian population immigrated to the United States as refugees, escaping the Cambodian genocide in the early 1980s. So really all of this is to say that not all Asians came here to pursue higher education. And in fact, perpetrating that stereotype can really cause our issues to go unnoticed.
Yeah, so let's connect all that back to how all of this perpetuates issues with language barriers and access to healthcare. So the majority of the AAPI population, similar to other minorities, tends to struggle with cultural taboos and finding employment opportunities. So this leads to being uninsured either for financial reasons or because the insurance system is just a colossal pain to navigate. Additionally, there are other barriers to care such as finding transportation to and from medical facilities, childcare, or cultural taboo about finding mental health resources, among many other obstacles. And all of these obstacles are further complicated by language barriers.
To elaborate a little bit on cultural taboo and share a fun little story, I remember when I had sex for the first time, I conveniently got a UTI. So I Googled my symptoms, found out exactly what I had. So I knew that I would need to go to the doctor to get antibiotics. However, when I was looking at the causes of UTIs, which I didn't really know at the time, I found out that the leading cause was actually penetrative sex for people with vaginas. So naturally, I couldn't tell my mom about the UTI. But I also read that sometimes they go away if you drink enough water and flush out the bacteria that's causing the infection. So I had this wonderful idea to wait a couple more days to see if this would work. And I drank loads and loads of water. In hindsight, would not recommend doing this. It was extremely, extremely painful. I remember going to dance class and having to pee like every 5 minutes, and just, it was miserable. The infection can actually spread to your kidneys too. So that's another reason, would not recommend waiting to go to the doctor. So finally, on Monday morning, I decided to drive to urgent care before school. And I told my dad, just asking like what doctor I should go to, knowing appointments cost a lot. And I wanted to make sure that like the place I went to was in our network. So he asked me what was wrong. And I told him that I had a UTI, hoping he wouldn't know why I had one. But he was super supportive and he told me where to go and didn't ask any questions. But at the end of the phone call, he did suggest that I call my mom. So I kind of knew full well at that point that he knew it was because of sex. And I just remember being in the car, calling my mom and very hesitantly saying, "Hey, I'm driving to urgent care and I have a UTI, I think." And she goes, the first thing out of her mouth was, "Well, did you have sex?" And I just kind of quietly, I was like, yes. And she actually started laughing and was like, "Okay, I need to go process that my daughter is sexually active, but let me know if you need anything else," which was such an odd response. But overall, I think the whole thing went more or less smoothly. My parents never had sex until marriage, so I was kind of terrified of telling them. And because of that, I didn't even want to seek the care that I needed, because I just kind of made up this concept in my head that I was afraid to tell them when I didn't need to be. So in this instance, you can see how this cultural taboo made me hesitant to seek medical care for what could have been a pretty bad medical problem. And you can also see how I didn't have a language barrier, you can also see how I didn't necessarily have the language to tell my parents what happened or what I needed. So this is really it's definitely a prominent problem in many Asian American communities.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that UTI story is like so common among so many people with vaginas who I know. Like, I know so many people in college even who've gotten UTIs and been nervous to like see a physician because they know it'll show up on their parents' medical bill. And
right,
the whole thing, it happens to so many people, way more common than you would think. And like Maya said, she didn't even have a language barrier to deal with. She just kind of assumed that her parents would look at her differently or not approve of her having sex because of cultural taboos that Maya had seen in Indian culture or experienced.
Exactly. If there was an additional language barrier, or if my parents had, quite frankly, reacted poorly, I'm not sure what I would have done, because for that entire year, I got so many UTIs and they were all a pain to navigate. I'm like a hyper prone. And it was a pain to navigate with going to the doctor, being embarrassed for something I really shouldn't have been embarrassed about because they are so common and it's normal, and having to get antibiotics and running everything through my insurance. And so all of that would have been much harder to navigate if I could not communicate properly with the people that I needed to.
Right. And I think something else that language can really impact is someone's ability to advocate for themselves in the healthcare system. So like everyone, doctors are not all-knowing, and you know your body better. And even if something may seem like a textbook problem, it's really important to have the patient's perspective and address whatever the patient feels like they need. So I think a good example of that is when I first got on the birth control pill when I was like 17, I had to switch pills
like a lot because my periods were getting more painful and irregular and my skin was like jumping back and forth on different pills. So if I wasn't a native English speaker, it would have been really hard for me to convey these symptoms and the desire to keep trying different pills to my gynecologist.
It's definitely interesting to think about the privileges that people who are native English speakers experience in terms of self-advocacy. On the topic of language and self-advocacy, I remember in our birth control episode when Tui asked about having to deal with accessing healthcare, the healthcare system herself when she was 16 through applying for Medicaid by herself. That's insane. I can barely navigate the healthcare system, and she was actually able to find a way to get on her own insurance. So this is another incredible example of Tui advocating for herself and her need for birth control. And it's also an example of something that someone who is not a native English speaker would likely not have been able to do themselves.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like health insurance and the healthcare system are definitely complicated enough as a native English speaker. And there are honestly so many examples of the difficulties that non-native English speakers face. So when I was like 18, I used to volunteer at a nonprofit medical clinic in my hometown, and we had patients who didn't speak English come in all the time. A lot of them were immigrants. A lot of them didn't have insurance or just didn't have like enough money to pay a copay. So this clinic really worked with a lot of like lower income people in Alabama. So often people who didn't speak English would have their sons or daughters translate for them. We also had a Vietnamese translator who we had to have specifically come in for patients who spoke Vietnamese. Like, I remember there was like a little sticky note at the nurse's office and you had to call them and it would result in a delay in your appointment. It was a whole thing. And like we mentioned earlier in the episode, patients may not want to mention sensitive medical information in front of a translator or in front of family. And lots of languages have words or phrases that don't directly translate, and this results in a lot of things getting lost in translation. Also, having a third party in the room can really mess with the patient-doctor relationship, or in my case, the relationship between the patients and volunteers or nurses. So I always made like a really big effort to make small talk with patients while I took their vitals, just to make them feel more comfortable and relaxed, especially because a lot of these low-income patients hadn't spent much time in medical in clinics or in hospitals. So this was kind of problematic because I obviously couldn't do this with patients who didn't speak English, because all I speak is English, a little bit of broken Hindi, and some decently proficient Spanish. And I always worried about this when patients who didn't speak English came in, because I felt like I was unable to ease any of the patient's tension. And the doctor's office isn't supposed to be a scary place. It just becomes one when it isn't structured with people like you in mind.
Right. And it's so hard to like maintain the integrity between a relationship between healthcare provider and patient. And as it is, that's already a tough relationship to establish. And it's just made even more difficult when you cannot talk about even very like simple procedural things. And so, yes, now that we have listed a ton of issues, what are some of the ways that we can combat them?
Yeah, so I remember watching a Grey's Anatomy episode in which an Asian woman is not able to seek healthcare for her wound because she couldn't describe what happened to her in proper English. And what's really sad about that is, although Grey's Anatomy has like a ton of drama, that's like not realistic. this is actually something realistic that happens to a lot of Americans today.
Yeah, and I feel that many of us as first generation Americans have attempted to adapt to this problem. I always accompany my grandma and grandpa who don't speak English to all of their appointments. The job of translation, which I often acquire, is so important for communication between the doctor and patient. And I've noticed on several occasions that the doctor can become quite frustrated with my grandparents for not understanding what they perceive as simple actions. So even simple procedures can become more complex and complicated. And I really do fear that one day my grandparents may have to receive immediate attention without either me or my parents there. And they can't necessarily ask for the help they need if there are no translation services available, which could really just ultimately put their lives at risk.
Yeah, I worry about the same thing with many of my relatives. I do believe, however, that there are ways to circumvent this problem. Online translation tools such as Google and Medibabble are utilized by many hospitals to ensure proper healthcare.
Yeah, and it's great that there are some apps out there and some forms of translating services that maybe don't require a third party that are already actually used to improve patient care. However, there are so many dialects out there that make it hard to circumvent most language barriers. And I know some hospitals are trying to get their informational pamphlets and other resources they hand out translated into some languages that they might find commonly used at their clinics, but it's still definitely a work in progress and can heavily affect a lot of Asian patients.
Okay, so now we're going to actually talk about some action items, as we do in every episode. So I think one good thing that we can do as a community is to hold physicians accountable for their behavior. I think something kind of toxic that marginalized communities and minority groups have been doing is like allowing this kind of behavior, not just in healthcare, but like in a lot of different aspects. Like someone will say something inappropriate or they'll do something insensitive and we just keep like financially supporting that business or that person, or we don't call them out for it. So I think like if you're comfortable with it and if you're at a position where you can call someone out for it and like see a different physician or see a different healthcare provider, I think that can be a really like great way to kind of show the healthcare system that like it is important for us to like have sensitive providers and to go to a doctor's appointment and know that like you're not going to be made fun of for not speaking English. Another thing you can do in terms of healthcare providers is like check resources at hospitals and clinics before you make an appointment. I know that this isn't a reality for everyone. Like not everyone's going to have reliable access to the internet to check this. Not everyone is even going to be able to read enough English to like check this before the appointment. But if you can check it, I think like even if you're checking it for your grandparents or if you're checking it for your mom or dad, I think that can be really helpful because some hospitals or clinics will have phones with translators on the other line or they'll have translators in person, but some just won't. So I think it's really good to check for that ahead of time rather than like going to the appointment and wasting your time in finding out while you're there that they don't have the resources that you need.
Yeah. And also if you have family or friends who cannot speak English, you can be a resource to them if you're comfortable with it and if they're comfortable with it. So maybe that means going to appointments with them or walking them through some of the things that they will see at the doctor's office or even, you know, a dentist's office or an eye appointment, and just kind of running them through the procedure so they don't necessarily feel like they're, I guess, let me start over. So they don't necessarily feel as if the doctor is just kind of running them through things that they are not comfortable with. And if you notice also that this is a problem in your own community, maybe reach out to clinics or health centers and see if you can help translate any of their materials or educate them on cultural norms. I know that that's a lot of hoops to jump through, but like it starts, you know, with a phone call or an email, and I'm sure a lot of places are kind of willing to learn as well. So there's also several things that you can do kind of with your own time as well.
Yeah. And then lastly, like I know this is a podcast for youth, but if you're planning on going into healthcare in any way, I think it's a really great idea to like just keep this in mind as you go through your training process, like not only through school, but also in your actual workplace. Like I know when I was looking at medical schools, I was really careful to like not apply to schools who didn't emphasize like cultural fluency and like diverse populations, just because I don't really want to be financially supporting institutions that are not like training physicians who are going to be like good members of our community. So I think like keeping that in mind when you're like not only looking at schools, but also looking at workplaces. And then also like workplace trainings. I think it's like really valid if you're in a training, like in your hospital, and like the diversity little module that they always have at every hospital or clinic is like not up to standard or like something inappropriate is said. I think it's a great idea to like call something like that out to not kind of perpetuate this in our generation and in this generation of healthcare workers.
And with all that being said, we hope that we kind of shed some light on what language barriers may look like for people in the AAPI community, as well as how we can begin to address them. And with this episode coming to an end, I am sad to say that this will be my last episode for our bodies, our stories here at Vela. I am moving to Birmingham in July to attend medical school. So I'm very excited, but I'm definitely going to miss being on this podcast. And Maya will be continuing the podcast in the fall with another intern. I don't know who yet, but I'm sure they will be wonderful. And the podcast will be taking a summer break. So this is the end of the first season, but please feel free to listen to any of our old episodes, check out our social media. We're going to be having different stuff going on during the summer.
For sure. Thank you, Divya, so much for your time here. Hope I can, you know, fill your big shoes, and maybe we'll just have to check in with you, have you be a guest star on the podcast next year.
Yeah, that would be so fun.
Thank you for listening. This episode was written by Divya Bowl, Maya Jamalpati, and another Reproductive Justice intern, Rajvi Kumar. And the music you are listening to right now.
Believe in fate, no psychic vision.